I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. I am your host. My name's Hannah Norris. I'm here with my husband and co-host, Carl Donnelly.
What? You're not allowed to say my name.
Just
when did that rule come
in? We're getting so close to the end, I'm just getting crazy. So we're here at week 37 of my pregnancy.
Yes.
This is a podcast about pregnancy. We have been recording this since week 6. So this is our 32nd episode.
Oh my God.
Months of recordings.
Yes, weekly recordings, charting your pregnancy.
Yeah, and talking to people and finding out about pregnancy and babies. And we're nearly here. We're nearly about to be joined by a new human.
Technically, it's at any time.
In the window, yeah. So this is something we've learned. Between 37 and 42 weeks, that is when the baby can come.
Yes.
Without it being premature or late.
Viable or something. Yeah. That's what they tend to use in books, which I find quite... Yeah, it's not a nice phrase.
No.
But yeah, you're in the actual birth window now.
Yeah. Which it seems like this, you know, the science of how long a baby's supposed to cook for is not really that scientific.
It's not a definite science, no. It's very, there's wiggle room.
Yeah, 5 weeks of it.
Yes.
But she's not here yet. We are in week 37. Supposedly she's the size of a, what fruit? I mean, it's stupid.
Is it
bigger.
More than one thing now?
No.
It's still one thing. Is it some sort of melon?
Yeah.
What was it?
Honeydew melon.
That's smaller than some of the other ones. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
Pineapple was ages ago.
Yeah.
And butternut squash was ages ago.
Yeah. And honeydew melon's not. It's not even the big melon. Watermelon. Watermelon's.
Maybe that's coming up.
It's going to be the final day.
Because that's, doesn't that thing, like it's watermelon out the size of something of a lemon? I always remember that there was something that people said when you were younger about what giving birth was like. It's like squeezing something the size of a watermelon. Out of an egg.
Yeah, that old phrase.
That classic hook. I don't know if you can hear, listeners, my voice sounds really different to me at the moment. I think there's something with the way that my insides are that's
maybe... Would it be your diaphragm?
It might be my diaphragm.
Maybe things are moving down.
Maybe. Like the kind of the depth of my voice, I feel quite constricted.
Right.
Which is not just today. I've noticed it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels weird to not be able to speak properly.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that's going on in my body.
Right. You've not said that for ages.
I know.
The worst phrase.
I've been really good at not talking directly about my body. Even though this has all been happening in my body.
I know it has, but yeah, it's just the phrasing is slightly, what's the word? Yucky.
we are in the birth window, and I've definitely got that sense of she's getting ready.
Yeah.
And I think we're quite ready now.
I think so. I think, yeah, this last few weeks, it feels like the final bits of... Just house admin.
Yeah.
A few bits we had to order, you know. And there was little silly bits we could have waited for. But, you know, we just now, even them, the little bits that we might forget we've ordered.
Yeah.
You know, we got the radar gun for...
Oh, yeah. One of the things we just have done this week is try to put together a little first aid kit. Because that's something that's recommended.
Yeah. And a lot of books say that little, you know, you've got your hospital bag.
Yeah.
But you also, and in your hospital bag, you've got sort of brand new baby clothes for getting them home. and at home you should have this many sleep suits, whatever, and all that. But yeah, we'd noticed that it said you should have a little just first aid style thing, not for any emergencies, just in case you want to check something like a temperature.
And yeah, that. And so with the temperature thing with thermometers, a book that I've been reading, I think it was this one. No, it was, I've read two books recently, both the ones that Viv Groskop recommended to us. And in Making Babies, there's a bit where with a normal thermometer, she puts it up her son's bum. And it just like the poo explosion comes out.
Oh, God.
Because that's a way that you would have taken temperature before.
When? Before?
10 years ago.
Oh, right. I don't know,
20 years ago. I remember as a kid, I used to get my temperature taken under my armpit. Do you remember having your temperature taken?
No, I just remember under the tongue. It's the only one I can physically remember.
I used to have armpit as a kid. But I think as a baby, up the bum.
Oh, my word.
So I'd seen a recommendation that having one of the kind of doctor in-ear temperature gun things is a good one.
Yeah.
So I'd been looking online for those, but they're all sold out, probably because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
That everyone wants to take temperatures.
Definitely.
But they do have these like...
Sorry, that's my microphone. I was just moving my fan up on my microphone. Sorry.
They do have these gun ones that are infrared that you shoot
at your head.
Which we purchased. We got a infrared
thermometer. And we unboxed it and shot it at each other's heads a few times.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. And it seems to work fine. And there's a little noise. It kind of goes beep, beep, beep. But we've worked out how to turn that off.
Yes.
And the idea with that as well is that it's even less intrusive than going in the baby's ear, because you can basically just shoot at their head while they're sleeping.
Exactly. I don't know if there's... It doesn't recommend like limiting it. I don't know. It can't do anything bad.
No.
It's not like, please don't shoot them in the head more than 10 times a day. Sort of.
And then these are the kind of ones that I think they're using at airports and things like that.
Yeah, basically it's a heat sensor type thing. And it's pricey, you know, so it is definitely, it was probably one of the few things we overspent
It cost more than probably everything else.
Well, it cost more than our pram and Moses basket put together, because we got cool secondhand vintage ones.
Yeah.
But it felt like, you know, we've saved so much money on other things. We've been given loads by friends. It felt like when we were doing that final order the other day, it was one of the ones we sort of went, oh, we've saved so much. Let's just splurge on this just so we got it.
But you weren't quite sure of it at first, but when you saw that you could shoot it at food, then you were like, yes.
Yeah, I mean, once I saw that it's got other options.
Once you saw you could take temperature of other things.
Yeah.
As well as just a baby.
Yeah. I mean, so I'd like to know I'm getting my money's worth.
Yeah. You wanted a gun thermometer.
Yes.
So the other things we got in our first aid kit, we bought a bottle of Calpol.
Yes.
Which is kind of, it's the UK's child paracetamol, really. It is so delicious.
I remember liking as a kid, the orange flavour.
I loved the cherry one.
Right.
I got busted trying to get into medicine cabinets and have a little taste of that. You know, they're not supposed to have that till they're 2 months old. But we got it ready for that. Saline spray.
Yes.
What's that? You just put it up their nose if their nose is blocked?
I think so.
Because there's that.
What you were about to say about the sucking the snot out of their nose with your mouth. Weirdly, that, as we've discussed, that is not something that I know I'd be able to do that. I'm happy now commit on air that I will suck the snot out of our child's nose with my mouth if needs be.
Okay, good.
But the payoff for that is you have to touch more poo.
That's okay.
Okay, cool.
That's okay as well.
Yeah. I can do all the wee under the sun. Poo is going to take me a good few days, I reckon, of adjustment.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to do that as well. I'm almost, you know, I'm weirdly like, as the pregnancy's gone on, I've definitely gone like, oh, I'm going to get poo on me. It's fine. Yeah. You know, and I've sort of understood, I've come around to it. It's fine. But I do still think it's going to, that first time a bit of poo touches my hand, just do be prepared for me to do a run around the house screaming.
I will. I keep thinking about talking to Josh last week, but he said, when he was talking about in the birth and the poo comes out and you just have to just scoop it up with a tissue and lock it away in the dark place in your Imagination.
Yeah.
That's my poo. That's...
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's and I'm that's going to be fine. I'm gonna do it regardless, and I will just cope.
Yeah.
And then I will, you know, one day I'll go and do ayahuasca and I'll just cry in the woods for one night and it'll all be out.
All right. Okay, cool. Okay. so we got the saline spray. We got the nail file.
The quietest electric nail file.
So I just had like some baby scissors on this list and Carl was like,
well, I'd read quite a lot of parents struggle with baby scissors with babies because it can feel quite, like even the clip, like it can feel quite, in what's the word, invasive to babies. So yeah. Some of them really fight against it and it can be quite traumatic to some of them. And then I just saw a few people recommending get a little baby nail file and I did a little bit of Googling. There's ones that said that are so quiet that it's just like this little... And just you can just do it without, and the babies don't mind.
Yeah.
So I just, that was another one I thought, all right, let's just, it's only like 20 quid.
Yeah.
So it's not like,
it's just still like, expensive for a nail file.
It is, but it's so quiet.
Yeah.
Like I could file our nails when you're asleep.
Yeah.
You won't even wake up.
Just think it's a little mosquito. something flying around.
Yeah.
I saw Felicity Ward say the other day that she's just nail filing all the time.
Yeah.
So I guess it's something that's going to be happening.
Or just let her nails grow, really.
No, it's dangerous. They'll scratch themselves.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's why you have to take care of them.
But, I mean, you've got to file, you can file them nice and smooth, but do you have to file them right down?
I don't know
what the rules are.
Yes, we'll see how much she scratches herself.
Yes.
I cut my nails this week. I had nail polish on, and then a couple of days ago I was like, I better take that off. Because I don't want nail polish remover smell in the when she's very little. And also I thought of those first photos holding a baby with like crusty half-red nail polish.
Yeah.
Which is a look that I often go for and I'm not worried about particularly. But I filed my nails and that's quite an achievement as well. So the other day I got Carl to brush my hair.
I wasn't very good at it.
This is the thing. I suddenly realized that, you know, having a daughter... But that's something you've probably not done before. Had to
not
do a girl's hair or brush hair and brush knots out of hair and that kind of thing. So we just sat down the other morning because my hair was quite knotty and I got Carl to brush it.
Yeah.
And then it looked really nice.
It looked lovely. But I did, I definitely was not the... I tried, you know, it's just hard. It's hard. Your hair is very long and, you know, there's a few times when I got near the roots, it got quite painful.
But yeah, I was teaching you how to kind of do it because a friend of mine a while ago, he's got two daughters and I saw that he'd secretly bought one of those heads that has like a mannequin's head kind of thing with hair on it. His daughters are maybe, you know, 9 and 4 or something like that. So he could practice plaiting the hair and he could practice and then surprise them with being able to do their hair.
Yes.
And I think that's a nice thing for
a nice thing to
dad to be able to do. But you can practice on me.
Oh, thank you.
But I might not want you to do that later. But I did the other day. I thought getting my hair brushed would be, you know, a thing.
Yeah.
We've done other little bits of practice as well.
Oh, yeah. This is the fun week's practice.
Yeah.
I say fun. It was actually, it was definitely, it was an interesting experiment.
Yeah. So Carl, obviously, with the Edinburgh Fringe being cancelled this year, as well as all of comedy and live performance and life, sort of. the show that he was supposed to be doing for the Edinburgh Fringe isn't happening.
Yes.
But he did a photo shoot in February.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that photo shoot, I bought a doll to kind of stand in for our actual baby.
Yes. It was going to be a funny little, you know, we were going to, in my Edinburgh photos, I was going to have my head transposed, what's that word, onto the babies, and then so it'd be like a little version of me representing our child. So we've had this doll since February that has just sits there. It's got a little moustache drawn on it and it's quite a funny little thing that we've used to test out the Moses basket and the prams, car seats,
tried putting the wrap on ourselves.
So it's ended up coming up really handy.
I'm sure you wanted to put it in the bin.
I think I did. And then, ended up sort of staying. And actually, weirdly, I would now say...
Get a doll.
Well, it sounds mental, but as a little tip for soon-to-be first-time parents, I think we've got so much use out of it.
Yeah.
It cost me £10 in Argos.
Yeah.
And, you know, once them photos became, them photos will get used again, I'm sure, for the show, but I, yeah, it, that doll's got so much more use than I ever expected it to.
Just that thing of, yeah, because with the car seat, we tried to, how do you put the
Get
harness
the straps
on it.
Yeah, and not, you know, you want to test how quick they tighten, you don't want to tighten them too sharply onto the baby. So, yeah, just having a little practice run on a doll.
Yeah, and I still haven't, I've tried that, putting the wrap on. I can do that. We've got one of those long wraps that you kind of wrap around and cross over the front and cross over the back. Yeah. And I've watched a few videos of doing that. And I can get it on me. And then when I have to put the leg in, I just can't work out how it goes.
It, yeah, but, I'm sure.
But that's, I think that's a, that's my visual thing. I can't play pool. I'm not very good at reversing cars.
Yes.
Unless I get shown how to do it, then I can do it. But if I have to, there's something in my brain that goes.
I'll try and learn it again because I watched the video and did it.
Yeah, straight away.
Relatively easy. Yeah. Yes.
But this week we practiced co-sleeping.
Yes.
Because I'd finished reading that book, Three in a Bed, and Carl's just finished it.
I finished it, yeah. I'm now on to the discontented baby.
Mm. And I spoke to my parents earlier in the week and they said that I slept in the bed with them a bit, which I didn't know before that. My dad said that he'd watched some video by Dr. Hugh Jolly, who's mentioned in Three in a Bed a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
Was kind of a sleep baby guy back in the 70s, 60s, back in the day. And they talked about co-sleeping and he'd watched a video in 1979 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like a time-lapse thing. And made them go, oh yeah, that's, we could try that.
Mm.
So, yeah, I didn't know that that was part of my life story. So we thought we'd try just putting the doll in the bed with us and see if we suffocated or.
So yeah, we had two nights. We had one night where the baby went in the middle of us.
Yeah.
And it was fine.
Yeah.
Neither of us lay on the baby.
No, I felt like I slept quite. Very lightly.
I definitely slept lightly. A few times I woke up, and I think I woke up because I almost leant on the doll.
Yeah.
Like I felt my elbow like lean a little bit, maybe towards, and I instantly woke up.
Yeah.
So there is, and that was just a doll. So I'm sure there is some instinct if there's a little person in the bed with you that you're going to rouse if anything happens.
But a lot of the suggestions are that your baby shouldn't go in between you.
No, yeah.
Because there is more likelihood that someone might roll over.
Yeah, I suppose it gives a double, slight, you know, the small risk of somebody laying on top of the baby, which obviously actually, having read that book and reading The Discontented Baby, and even reading, I just started skimming through that Alicia Silverstone one you have, which is The Kind Mama, which has all the language that makes me sort of go, ooh, yeah, it's all mamas and babas and papas and all this. But even in, like, a lot of that covers a fair bit of co-sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, the stats on overlaying are pretty, pretty low.
Yeah.
And large majority it's due to alcohol, drugs, you know, the things that would make you not sleep lightly. But yeah, even then, obviously, there is still a minor risk, and it's less of a risk if it's the baby's on one side rather than in the middle.
And that you're not supposed to put the covers over them. So that was something we were, before we got into the bed, going, how does this work if they're in the middle?
Yeah.
But it was okay.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was a warm night, so we were lucky. Yeah. But yeah, we just had the duvet down.
But yeah, that was a successful experiment. But then the mum, was too tired the next night to try it again. I just wanted to have a normal good night's sleep. So Carl had the doll on his side of the bed.
I took the bebe for the night over my side.
Onto the edge.
Yeah, so basically I just slept facing out.
Which is this idea, you kind of sleep in the recovery position.
Yeah, so I slept on sort of my side, but slightly tilted over, and the baby in just under, just left of me, on the back. It's
supposed to be at like breast nipple.
It is, yeah.
Boob, boob feeding height.
Yeah. So basically, I slept in that position with the baby for a night, and it was fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't in no way more. You know, again, I definitely slept lighter than normal, and I woke up a bit more, but I went back to sleep every time, and I think it was a really good experiment. I really learned a lot from it, that it's not having a baby in the bed with you obviously a real baby's totally different. I'm not saying that this is the perfect test, but it's still just having that there definitely taught me how aware you are when you're asleep.
Yeah.
That I didn't realise.
Yes. I was worried because we have a double bed. We don't, it's not queen or king or anything. It's not a big bed.
It's a compact
bed. So just thinking, how can three fit in there? But it seems like yes.
I think it's possible.
So I think tonight I will give up my sleep.
You'll take the baby.
Yeah. And I'll try it out on my side and see how we go.
And you have photographic evidence as well of my sleeping with the little doll.
It looks so sweet.
Because when you woke up in the morning,
I was... it looked so cute. I got up to go to the toilet and Carl just was there with the doll with the moustache on it, all like cradled in his arms. So
yeah.
Yeah, I got a photo of that. Listen. We'll be selling them for £20. You can put them in your nursery.
That'll be for the next season of the podcast.
Yeah,
which is what could that be called if we ever do another one after the baby comes along? It would be early childhood podcast.
Yeah, we'll think of a good. We've got to get some
rhyming
slang.
Let's not commit to it though, because you know we're going to be knackered and it's going to be hard work. Yeah. So let's not act like we're just going to suddenly be like, "Hey, let's do a podcast."
Everyone, just look, search for it, subscribe, like us online. So with nursery as well, we don't have a nursery. At the end of our room, there's the Moses basket right now. There's kind of a spot there.
Yes.
And there's been a couple of bits of, there's some fairy lights and there's like a star fairy light that I'd wanted to put up and have just been sitting on the floor, but we put them up yesterday.
And it looks really nice.
It's like such a nice place to sleep.
It does, it looks lovely.
So that feels kind of ready as well.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've got options. The Moses basket fits comfortably by the bed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got options of in the bed, right next to the bed in the Moses basket.
Yeah.
End of the bed, if needs be.
Yeah. And it's because we've kind of been reading and sharing books this whole time and talking about things throughout the whole, you know, on this podcast and just to each other when we're not recording ourselves. we like got this thing that we really do feel like we're on the same page with stuff and have covered a whole load of topics, which was interesting because you spoke to a friend this week who feels like who's quite a new dad and he's in a little bit different situation.
Him and his partner are definitely in currently in the very, you know, what is their baby must only be like a month or 2 months old or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have a differing opinion on these early stages because the baby's quite unsettled at night and not sleeping well. And, you know, they're both in that sort of one's sort of more leaning towards the natural, you know, it's fine. It's just, it's a baby. It's still learning how to be in the real
alive.
World.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just got to just get up when it cries or, you know, feed it, keep it with us in a sling. I just try and keep it as calm as possible, whereas the other one is much more, we need to start trying to get it into a sleeping pattern. So, yeah, that's something I think we're not hopefully going to fall into.
Yeah. I mean, we might, you know, I think we're still... There'll be parents who listen to this and still going, you guys.
You don't know what you've got in store.
You're a couple of idiots. You've put a doll in the bed and
you've talked to each other. But I think there's, you know, I still absolutely don't think we're prepared.
No.
You know, what I mean is we're as prepared as you can be, but with the understanding that you can never fully be prepared for what it's like to have a baby.
Yeah.
But I just think our history of being together in everything we've encountered... We are always on the same page. So I think it will be hard and we might both have to change our tact, you know, into what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I can't foresee a time where we are having to change tact because one person's very different to the other one.
Yeah.
I think we'll be changing tact together.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't mean that in an arrogant, like, we're just so the same, you know? I just mean, we found it. We're passing books back and forth and like, now, when I finished Three in a Bed, I said to you, right, and we had a little sort of brief debrief of like, this is how I feel having read that book. And we only had to chat for about 5 minutes to realise we were both totally in agreement on the plan when it comes to sleeping.
Were there some bits that you wanted, that you had?
There was loads. I just noted, you know, I stick my little stickers in books to just for bits that jump out. But it was weird. One of the bits, I think, was the bit that really, I think, is a good thing to hammer home to people when they talk about baby sleeping. And I think I sort of paraphrased it when we were chatting to Josh last week. And it was just about that thing of learning to get out of your mind to think of babies sleeping as a totally different thing to adults sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, like just talking about this thing here, it was, what is it? Like talking about, just talking about when you actually look at the national health statistics of adult sleeping is one of the biggest complaints that people go to their GP about.
Yeah, right.
You know, so the fact that when we sort of obsess about baby sleeping patterns and having to get them into a routine and all that, it's almost arrogant to do that, knowing that pretty much it's out of your circle of friends and that, or family, there are so many adults who don't have a sleeping pattern.
Yeah.
So we're kidding ourselves if we think we can just create a sleeping pattern for a baby.
Yeah.
When we can't create it for adults. So I think that's really...
Like you were saying, people who have to listen to the radio to get asleep to. Always have a YouTube on or...
There's loads. Like most people need distractions to get to sleep. So it's totally understandable that a baby will also either... You know, they've got shorter sleep cycles as well. So it's natural they're going to wake up more.
Yeah.
Like we wake up constantly. You know, it's just... As when you're adults, you just... You're used to it, so you come out of sleep and then go back to it without even remembering.
Yeah.
So for babies, though, they're not aware enough yet. If they wake up suddenly like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And they need something at that point. So it's, I think, the best prep I'm doing in my mind is just trying to cement that idea that it's not the baby's fault. It's learning how to be a human being, which is to have sleep issues.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that's the norm, then accept that as the norm.
I'm Tilly Steele.
And I'm Helen Monk.
And this is Bitchin'.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, why do you read the Wikipedia page?
It's good to practice.
A podcast where every week we talk about a different person.
So how old was he when he first popped on the scene?
That's a great
question. If you say he was my age, I'm gonna fucking die.
And we veer wildly off track.
Pop that Prosec.
Available on all your podcast apps.
That's not my...
just can you not say in the advert?
Available on all your podcast platforms. Just search Bitchin' or Great Big Owl.
We'll see you there.
That was all right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Again, I think with the kind of sleep conversation that we've been having as well, though, I do feel very, that I have that awareness that you are not going back to a 9-to-5 job.
Yes.
After 2 weeks, and our life can be interrupted by that.
Yeah.
Without it being detrimental to the. To the kind of ongoing, the jobs or whatever you've got to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's just other bits about sort of some of the myths about independence. That thing of sleep training is about teaching them independence.
Yeah.
And it just talks, you know, just reading some of the books about that we've read, a lot of them hint at it or talk about it. But, you know, to the assumption that a 6-month-old has the sort of consciousness yet to understand independence and things like that is really weird. You know what I mean? Just to think that when you're letting it cry itself to sleep at night and leaving the room and it, like, it's literally there in the darkness on its own crying because it doesn't understand what's happening, to assume that that's teaching it a good lesson, I think is quite, I don't know, that doesn't sit right with me. I'm much more of the mind that we'll cross that bridge when we come to it with independence, when they're a bit more aware of themselves as separate to the world and their own little being, which, you know, even that documentary we watched on the BBC where they talked about, like, normally an understanding of them as being separate to others and, you know, understanding that they are a separate, like, sort of person, you know.
Yeah, getting identity and individuality.
That's, like, not till, like, 18 months or something. So I just think I'm much more, I think I'm willing to take the hit of tiredness and exhaustion in them early days to sort of not try and risk trying to teach a baby independence when I'm not 100% sure you can do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, she won't be going to the shops by herself. I've got her a little mask and just send her out to do the essential shopping for a little bit.
Yeah.
No, none of that. Another couple of things that I've tried to do, a couple of things over the past few weeks. One of them is perennial massage, which I just cannot figure out. I've tried it twice now. Basically, as far as I can see, what you're supposed to do is put some olive oil on your thumbs, put them up your vagina, and put both, the ideal is to put both your thumbs in your vagina and push on your perineum, which is at the back bit towards your bum. I can't get my hands anywhere.
But is that because you missed the window of opportunity?
No, I'm supposed to do it from week 35, like upwards.
Oh, right, okay.
This is when you do it at the end to get it stretched.
Right.
So, you know, I just have to talk to it instead. I'm just talking to it and my silent inside voice and asking it not to tear and be stretchy.
Do you need to, because we've, I don't know if we've mentioned it on here, we've put up our garden, our yearly garden blow up hot tub.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's much cooler than it sounds. You bought it for me for Christmas a few years ago.
Yeah, because Carl loves a spa or a sauna.
I love them. So Hannah bought me a blow up sort of temporary jacuzzi, essentially.
It's called a lazy spa Vegas.
That's not an advert for them, we're not getting anything for that. It's just we've had it for a few years and it goes up in the summer, uses way too much electricity for, you know, because it's constantly, once it's up, it's up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got a constant filter and heat system in it. But surely would regular visits to that not help with the softening of your
perineum? I haven't seen any research or studies.
We should do our own, like the baby study we did.
That'll be the next podcast, all the studies we've done.
All these peer-reviewed studies we did during your pregnancy.
Yeah. I had to do a bit of looking about being in spas as well, because they say you shouldn't go in spas when you're pregnant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We have turned that temperature down. We put it like 3 degrees lower than we normally would have it.
That's part of it. So from what my study found was that that's particularly about spas that are communal.
Yes.
So there's chance of infection and things like that. And they're regulated at a higher temperature, 40 degrees or something. And that the jets are not particularly good.
Yeah, we've not used the jets.
But because swimming is so encouraged for pregnant women, I was wondering at first if chlorine might be an option, or, you know, be a problem, but doesn't seem to be, because, like I said, swimming's really encouraged. Not that anyone can really go swimming at the moment. And that the temperature of the water we've put to kind of like 32 and even lower, just to make it.
The hottest we've had it is like 35. And even that is just below body temperature. So it's sort of swimming. It feels like a swimming pool.
I think 32 is like swimming pool temperature. About 35 is, like they said, hydro pools.
Yeah.
But then if you are having a water birth, the water temperature is 37 degrees.
Is it? So that's just above body temperature.
So they, yeah, so it's around body temperature is what they want. Yeah, so when the baby comes out, it's the same environment.
Because what's average body temperature, isn't it? Is it 37?
Well, yeah, ours on the gun one was
36.6. thank you. When you took an average reading over about 25 gunshots.
It's an average 36.6. So yeah, so once you, but yeah, then the birthing pool temperature is a bit hotter.
Yes.
But then we go to put it that hot because then she might think it's time to come out.
I know. And I don't know how I'd feel about our baby being born in a lazy spa Vegas. A birthing pool, yeah, but not a Vegas sort of slightly ghetto garden spa.
Yeah, although we did talk about it. It was very early on that we were like, we've got that spa. Yeah. We could have a baby in that.
We can call her Vegas.
Oh, no.
Oh, little Vegas.
We are still talking about names. That is a thing that's still conversational.
Well, I think we're still, you know, the main one we've had in mind is still floating around the top spot.
Yeah.
But I think we're,
it's just whether she looks like that or not.
Yeah.
You got something else to read?
I know, I was going to say, another thing I just flick in where I've noted things in this book. One of the things that, again, it was an idea that I hadn't really thought about. When people talk about how regular newborn babies feed, and trying to get them into a feeding pattern really quickly, just this whole, the idea it says in this book is, and this is the Free in a Bed by Deborah Jackson, says that the fetus in the womb is on constant tap to nourishment via the placenta. A newborn baby weans itself very gradually from this uninterrupted flow. So that idea that they've got to get into a sleeping and feeding pattern. That they've literally spent 9 months growing, in a dark, warm place with constant nourishment.
Yeah.
So I think that, but then they come out. I think we as humans who've spent, you know, however many years just getting used to our own patterns, we forget that that is such a big jump from a baby coming out of there to suddenly just being out here where we expect them to do things around our schedule.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, again, there's trying to keep that. I'm trying to keep that in my mind for those nights where there's no sleep. And I think it's easy to sort of assume the baby is doing some conscious thing to keep you awake.
I think for me, the change in stomach size is something that I always think about. So that when they're born, it's the size of a cherry.
Yeah.
After a week, it goes to a walnut.
Yes.
After a month, the size of an egg. That, like, the amount of food that you get in the size of a cherry
is nothing.
Is nothing. No, so you need to feed again.
Yeah, totally.
And as well, thinking about my own eating habits, and that when I'm waking up at the night at the moment, I usually have a drink of water.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I might have a sip. Sometimes I might gulp down half a bottle of water, just because depends how thirsty I am.
I go back to sleep. The water thing was the thing that really was a moment where I shifted to realizing, you know, babies aren't drinking water.
Yeah.
You know, if they're breastfeeding, that's all they get in. And I think about how often I just sip water throughout the day. So, you know, so when people say that baby feeds every 90 minutes and how regular that feels, it's less regular than I would be drinking some liquid or then eating, or, you know, throughout the day. Obviously through the night it's different, but during the day I'm grazing all the time.
And that's another thing that I've kind of tried over the last week, is the colostrum harvesting.
Oh, yucky.
So the idea that from like about 37 weeks you should be producing colostrum, which is the dark yellow milk that contains lots of nourishment, and that's what the baby has for the first few days before your larger milk supply comes in and they start to drink that. But the colostrum stays in there throughout the whole time. And the idea that you can harvest colostrum by like squeezing it out of your boobs and then you put them in a syringe and put them in the fridge so you can so you've got some backup.
Yeah, but you've tried it a few times and managed to gross yourself out.
I really don't think there's anything in there to squeeze out yet. I can't picture. And that milk, self-milking thing.
Yeah.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that yet. That's not viable in my brain.
It's okay. You don't have to. Not everyone has to do it.
No, but I wanted to try it, you know. But I sort of only just half tried it. That was... But give it a go. I recommend it. See if you can do it, because I can't. What else? You keep looking through...
Well, no, I'm just trying to think. No, this, I mean, it's unrelated. I just think this is a really good book. I really, that was one. This one, the last ones I've read.
Yeah.
But it's
the last one was the textbook.
Oh, God, that goddamn textbook. What was it called?
Don't know.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that was annoying. Then I've read some
other books. Every parent should know.
Every parent should know. And all the information there is good, but the way it's laid out, like a school textbook, just stressed me out. It took me back to doing my GCSEs. So that wasn't fun. And I've gone off and read a few other non-baby stuff. But then this year, Free in a Bed, The Discontented Baby, I think they're really good.
Yeah.
And they're good for this period of time. Yeah. That thing where, right, read loads about pregnancy and then the sort of further along, you know, child psychology, but I'm enjoying now reading about, right, when it's a brand new baby, what's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on in its little head?
Well, I've been reading the two books that Viv Groskop recommended to us. The first one is called Making Babies by an Irish poet writer. Her name's Anne Enright. Maybe Anne something.
I think it is Anne Enright. Yeah.
And that's really good. But I'm loving Operating Instructions by Anne Lamott.
Yeah, you keep laughing when you're reading it.
Yeah, it's so great. It just covers the first year of her life with her son. And she's funny and messy and honest and
the bit you tell me about her when the baby got stuck down the back of a futon was really funny, but you know, it sounds horrific when you say it in those terms, but she describes it as fine. The baby was fine.
Yeah,
but yeah, those things, I suppose it's good to read those hit mishaps as much as it is to read about the ideal of what you should be doing. Everyone I know who's got young children has done something at some point that sounds horrific.
Yeah.
You know, there's Alfie Brown, comedian. I remember in Edinburgh a few years ago, I remember seeing him the day he spilt a coffee on his baby son.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it sounds horrendous. And it was a total accident. And he was devastated by it. But like, you know, the kid was fine. You know, the kid absolutely will never remember that. Do you know what I mean? So it is that thing of, I think, those sorts of tales are just as important to hear.
Yeah. And she gets pregnant to a guy who then doesn't want anything to do with her and her son. And so there's all background and there's all just about her life that comes in and you get to know her and their relationship. It's really well written. I'm really loving reading it. And it's a good time, like you said, to be reading it. Because we also got Your Baby Week by Week, which is what Josie Long recommended to us, which is like a weekly what's going to happen this week, or what developmentally and what kind of societally might happen. So I just started flicking through that last night, and things, you know, that the midwife comes to visit you the day after community midwife. I didn't really know that.
No, we still haven't. To be honest, you've got, obviously tomorrow you've got a midwife appointment. I don't know if I'm allowed. I don't think I'm allowed yet to go with you, but you know, we still, because of your sort of, they're doing blood tests and checking your platelets, and I don't know if that's the reason, but we as yet don't know what the plan is for the baby coming out.
That's the other big stuff that's happening right now, because I had some routine blood tests, and my platelets, which are part of the blood, I think it's platelets and hemoglobin, cells and things like that, the platelets are the part of your blood that are responsible for clotting.
Yes.
And they noticed that my my voice is so bad.
It is sweet.
My platelets are really dropping. And if they're, the normal range for platelets, guys, is 150 to 450 per whatever. So mine had dropped down to about 100. So then they checked me again and they'd gone to 76, I think. And then they checked them again and they'd gone to 57. So when they went down to 57, they put me on, well, they suggested I go on steroids, which felt weird.
Yeah.
But I agreed to do that. So I've been taking these steroids, which are not anabolic steroids. I was like, are these the ones that they do at the gym? They're not. I don't really know what they do, but what they should do is increase the production of the platelets. So I've been having to take them the past 2 weeks. A reason why it's an issue is because if you don't have many platelets, then you're likely to bleed more because your blood isn't going to clot.
Yeah.
So in birth, there's a likelihood of, I guess, a more hemorrhaging.
Yes.
More bleeding after birth. They might have to have platelets on hand to give you. And if you are, I think it was like if your platelets are below 70, then you can't have an epidural.
Yeah.
Because the risk of bleeding in your spine when they do the injection is higher. And if they're below 50, then you can't have an anesthetic. So the reason why I've kind of said yes and gone with the steroids is because if we were to be put in an emergency situation,
yes,
then we need those to be an option.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, I'm still definitely on the natural birth train and I'm not opting for an epidural or a cesarean.
Yeah.
But if they have to happen, then I want it to be available.
Yeah.
And it also means that when home birth was suddenly becoming an option again, that looks like that's off the table.
Yeah. Unless when you get the results tomorrow, your platelets have suddenly gone up to 300. I don't reckon they're going to offer a home birth.
Yeah. Which again, because with the chance of home birth, I think they probably, you know, if things did all get better and then seem to level out and everything's fine, they probably would, you know, the whole idea of home births being offered is so women can give birth where they want to give birth.
Yeah.
So even if that means that we're having kind of consultations and referrals for that later than you would usually, they should be open to that.
Yeah.
Because there's things like they just have to come over and check your house and check you out.
Well, Viv Groskop, she sent me an email yesterday with a link to a news story about a woman who was all geared up to give birth in a hospital, you know, her plan, that was her birth plan. And then I think a week before the birth, her partner got a letter saying he'd had some historical health issue that meant he had to go into isolation for
12 weeks.
He was on the 12 weeks thing. Yeah. So
he got the vulnerable list.
Yes. So he got told he was going to have to self-isolate, and that meant he couldn't come for the birth. And it meant last minute she totally changed her plan to a home birth and ended up having a very successful, easy home birth with only paracetamol for pain relief.
Yeah, which is interesting. It said that it was only paracetamol, but the midwives do bring gas and air.
Oh, that kind of stuff. That wasn't just all that was available. It was just that it ended up, she did it at home, and she had a very, you know, nice and, well, in the context of the easy-ish pregnancy, birth. So I mean, it's, you know, it shows that it can all change last minute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, within a week of the due date or the actual birth itself, things can totally shift.
Yeah. Which means that, but I think the moment my thinking's had to shift to that we'll be in the hospital.
Yes.
And that's why we've got the hospital bag packed. Got stuff there. We're still going to go and have another look through it.
Yeah, I did a second sweep yesterday. And
I swapped a t-shirt out the other day.
Yeah. I put a t-shirt in for me.
Yeah.
I put some deodorant in and a little toothbrush and stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, kind of that shifting of going, okay, we're probably going to be in hospital for this.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yes.
And the same, so I'm going back tomorrow to be checked and just see how, I might have got results today, but they haven't come through on my phone yet. There's this great thing with the NHS. It's probably because I've been having so many tests that I get emails and then I get to look at my results and study all the graphs, and all the different things in my blood. And then I can link through to what that means. And it's not like being in Dr. Google land. It's just informing. I'm taking it as information. I know what's happening.
Yeah, it's
happening.
Actually just a proper reading of your blood.
Yeah. Yeah, I know all about my blood. and I also had a scan last week, which was the 36-week scan, which Carl wasn't allowed to come to.
I went to Waitrose instead.
Yeah, I got so tired.
Oh, yeah, it was such a long walk. I just didn't, because we walked to the hospital. It was nice, because we didn't realise how near our hospital
is. The walk is like less than half an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we made some jokes about you walking there when you go into labour.
Crawling over wormwood scrubs.
And I made jokes about us walking back after you've given birth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so near. So we walked down, but then it was such a hot day that after I left you at the hospital, I carried on my walk to Waitrose and Shepherd's Bush, and I forgot that that is just, I think, longer.
And also, you have not done very much walking for the past 3 months.
I've done walking. I've been getting my rest in, yeah.
That'd be the longest walk you've done since quarantine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the scan, guess what? Massive Janet is in the 57th percentile.
She's chilled out, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's settled down.
From 99% to 57%.
It's good.
Yeah.
It means we're not having an absolute giant anymore.
She's like about 3 kilograms, which still seems, you know, lots of babies are born, which is like 6.9.
That's still, yeah.
6 pounds, 9 ounces or whatever, which lots of babies are born around that size.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not going to give names or anything, but a couple of people from our NCT group have this week given birth.
Yeah, the babies are coming.
The babies, yeah, that's a moment of real, oh my God, it's real. But one of them, the birth weight was 6.8. 8, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is about the size she is now. But that's why she could come out now.
Yeah.
Or she could stay in there for 4-5 more weeks.
Well, and end up like 9 pounds, like some babies.
Like me. yeah, with the doctor, though, when I was doing the steroids chat, I was referring in my head to, I think it's from Millie Hill, the positive birth book, and she wrote Give Birth Like a Feminist. I watched a talk with her, and I listened to the Deliciously Ella podcast again, which is
about her birth.
She has one where she talks to Millie Hill.
Oh, she does, yeah. It's one that I listen to. It's great.
But this acronym that you should go into kind of doctor's appointments with, which I think is BRAIN. So B, wait, is it BRAIN? No.
What's the idea? Talk us through the ideas and we might be able to work it out.
Yeah. So N is definitely the last one. That's like, what if I do nothing?
Yes.
With this. I is the letter before that, which is, what's my instinct?
Okay.
On this.
Yeah.
A is, what are the alternatives?
Yeah.
R, what are the risks? B, what are the benefits?
Okay.
It is BRAIN.
Yeah. Well done. We went backwards and got there.
Yeah. So when the doctors are telling you about what they want you to do, just having those ideas in your mind, what are the benefits? What are the risks? What are the alternatives?
Yes.
What's my instinct saying? And what happens if I do nothing?
Yes.
So you can then make your own choice from what they give you, what the information they give you that covers that scope. The hematologist, so I had an appointment with a hematologist and an obstetrician, and the obstetrician was much more open to answering my questions.
Yeah.
And the hematologist was less so.
That's because they just know about blood.
Yeah, but I wanted to know about blood. And I wanted her to tell me about blood. This before I properly started looking at my charts as well.
Yeah, that's true. Now you know as much as
So tomorrow I'm going to be telling her about blood. But it was because I was in that appointment by myself as well that usually you would be there at those appointments with me.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, I speak for myself at those appointments, but often there'll be something you pick up on or have a question about or something else that comes into the conversation that I felt like, right, I'm just, it's me here and I've got to figure this out with them. Yeah. Which then we talked about it afterwards still, like it was still then my choice to take the steroids or not do it or do whatever I want with the information they gave me. But I did feel very... I felt like I had to stand up and make sure that I could ask those questions that I might not have if I hadn't sort of read
Definitely.
Books that I had.
And,
and taken that acronym and those ideas about your rights.
Yeah.
In that setting.
I think it's I genuinely, you know, as we're coming, you know, we've probably only got a couple of episodes of this left.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was doing this or maybe it was the fact that we're doing this probably comes from the idea that we wanted to learn more.
Yeah.
But I think just staying, like, yeah, the amount of input we've had from others, be it books, guests, podcasts,
yeah,
stuff, you know, NCT, I actually think the more, yeah, you can't learn too much, can you? Do you know what I mean? And I think it's taught, yeah, it teaches you just how much input you do have in the actual, even the medical side of it, you know. Yeah. They're medical professionals only, they're seeing however many people that day. They've obviously got semi-rigid rules on sort of the standards, what they want to happen. Things like inductions often can be, you know, we've heard stories of inductions often being because they don't want you to give birth over the weekend.
Yeah.
Just because of staffing issues and stuff like that. So, you know, it's not always done for your benefit.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's done to your detriment.
No.
It just means there's different factors. And I think I've definitely learned so much from this, that similar, like the questions that I've thought up when we've gone for chats with doctors and stuff has all come from the things we've learned along the way.
Yeah. And that even, but that thing that even throughout this whole process, that was still felt challenging to be in there and challenge that authority and question.
Because you sort of, I think the risk as well, you sort of feel like you're being, actually, I've watched a YouTube video,
yeah, exactly,
that sort of person, isn't it? When actually you're not, you're just looking out for your baby,
yeah,
and your own health.
Yeah.
And you're just asking a couple of questions, but they're probably used to people going, well, I watch a YouTube documentary and I think vaccines are wrong, whatever. Like, they're probably getting so much more of that now that they're even more, like, defensive when they are asked questions.
Yeah. But this idea as well that, you know, it's your birth, it's my birth, it's my baby. They're looking after a whole load of different people, so I've got to look after my own.
Exactly.
Experience. Yeah. For my body.
Come on.
So, yeah, there we are, 37 weeks. We are. We'll be back together with a guest next week.
Yes.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Felicity.
We might have a baby next week.
Yeah. The plan is that we're doing this up to 40 weeks if we get there.
I've got a suspicion we're not going to get to 40 weeks.
I feel like she's going to be early as well, but, you know, that's just my instinct. That's the letter I from the brain acronym, guys.
I've got a feeling. And what date is it now we're recording this?
The 4th of June.
4th of June. I think
she's due on the 19th.
I think within the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to have a child.
Yeah.
As a betting man in my youth.
Yeah.
That's my instinct.
I think you might be. Anyway, yeah, next week we're talking to Felicity Ward, who I will be 38 weeks. We talked to her when she was 38 weeks, back when I was 8 weeks. So I thought that was a nice little bookend.
And she's actually very kindly offered us some baby things.
Yeah, we're getting some gear.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening. We are around on the socials at Cheggers Pod. Come say hi.
Thank you.
You might even get to see the baby or Carl with a doll. Okay, thanks. Bye. Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Can't face those Twitter notifications? Forgot to watch anything but Netflix? Dreading the video conference small talk at 9? You need a news vitamin, you know. You need the Smart 7. It's a brand new daily podcast that puts your brain into gear. Everything you need to know in less than 7 minutes. You need the smarts? Hey, we got the smarts. The Smart 7, every weekday at 7 a.m. Available right now on Spotify and all the usual places.